Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor.
And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.
Hello, and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many paths of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though that might feel counterintuitive, just like the nightingale singing out in the dark. Thanks for joining me today. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted that you could join me today for a slightly different show. Later, I have the first in my new series of well-being product reviews for you, so stay tuned for that. And I'll be also explaining how to create something delightful, not to mention packed full of vitamins, out of one of my favourite fruits to forage at this time. First, have you ever had one of those days where nothing went right? You thought you have everything under control, but it turned into a bit of a disaster. Well, what do you usually do in those circumstances? Stomp off in a huff and hide under a duvet? It's tempting, I know. Or do you make the best of the situation, change tack a little bit and carry on regardless? Well, that's what happened when I headed over to see friend of the show and medical herbalist Karen Brines-McLean to record us both on an autumn foraging trip. It was a beautiful day, but the wind was just impossible for outdoor recording, so we changed tack and headed into her dispensary, only to find I'd forgotten an adapter for my microphone and, well, I did have backup, of course, but it wasn't great. But we decided to go for it anyway, so the sound isn't the best, despite my best efforts. I'm glad we did go for it, though, because I found my introduction to her dispensary very informative. These days, her dispensary is at her home, as she works out of a consulting room in her wonderful organic garden. So, here's Karen, the garden herbalist, as she's now known, in her element.
So this is my herbal dispensary. So most medical herbalists will have a dispensary with a number of herbs that they use for blending their medicines for clients. In my dispensary, I've got about 150 different herbs on the shelves. They're alcohol extracts, they're tinctures or fluid extracts. And the beauty of having them in liquid form is I can actually blend up individual bespoke prescriptions for people. You know, I don't have a big tablet factory that I can actually mix tablets up. And, yeah. You know, I think the tinctures are really important because you get to taste the herbs, you get to interact with the sort of energy of the plant, the aromatic principles really come through. Whereas if you actually have a very sterile tablet, what do you get? You don't get that flavour, you don't get that essence of the plant. So we have that ability to mix medicines, we really taste our medicines, and they're really highly absorbed as well.
Yeah, is it better than taking a tablet? Because tablets also have other stuff in them to make them into tablets, don't they?
Yeah, well, they have fillers and binders. You can get capsules that don't have fillers and binders. You know, there's a time and a place for both.
Yeah.
You know, I do have herbal tablets on my shelves, but when you're working in a situation like I am in herbal medicine clinic and trying to individualise treatments, that's when the beauty of using a herbal dispensary like this really comes into its own.
Yeah.
Because people come in with complex medical conditions, and we're looking for lots of different actions when we're trying to get somebody feeling better again. Whereas maybe a herbal tablet, a lot of the ones on the market might just have one herb.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, it might have several effects to it. But, you know, if somebody comes in to, say, have a treatment for something like headaches, I might be treating their digestive system as well. You know, they might be a bit constipated. There might be a herb in there for the liver. And so by having that ability to mix a very holistic prescription, we can work in a very holistic way with someone.
Yeah, and so it's a little bit like those old school apothecaries where they would be mixing potions and doing this, that and the other, and they would also probably have been making pills and tablets and stuff like that as well. But yeah, it's that old tradition of just mixing what somebody needs in one dose of whatever tincture, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that hopefully will help. So what have we got here now? We've got tinctures behind us, but I see we've got a whole load of herbs, dried herbs in front of us here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you do a bit of both as well, don't you? You'll mix up a tea.
I'll mix up teas for people as well. So sometimes I'll use, you know, a tincture for the main part of a prescription, and maybe a herbal tea is a little bit of an adjunct to that. So, yeah. You know, I've got some herbs that are urinary antiseptic herbs. So if somebody has tendency to cystitis, I might use those. Sometimes with the respiratory problems, I'll use herbs for a tea rather than a tincture or a combination of both, because some of those mucilaginous herbs, expectorant herbs that really loosen and moisten things, actually work better as a herbal tea.
Yeah. So it depends on what's wrong with you, what you get. Yeah.
And occasionally I get people that are either sensitive to alcohol or will not use alcohol for religious reasons. So, you know, if I have a Muslim client, I know that in, you know, you can have alcohol as a preservative and it is accepted by some people, but some people do not like to have alcohol at all.
No.
And that's when I would tend to use the herbal teas as well. But as you can see, I've got maybe about 40 herbs and herbal teas. I've got 150 here. So I've got much more variety of herbs in the dispensary. And actually, some of those herbs are so bitter, I wouldn't like to give it as a herbal tea. So things like andrographis. I'll let you taste something. Andrographis.
Do I want to if it's that bitter?
Ooh, well, actually, bitter is really good for us. Bitter stimulates taste receptors in our mouth. It stimulates the whole digestive system.
Oh, okay.
So bitter herbs tone the sphincters. They stimulate the flow of bile. Mm-hmm. And they do stimulate the immune system as well. So this herb here is andrographis.
What does that do?
It's a really, really good immune herb. So it's fantastic.
Not giving you very much there.
I'm not giving you very much. You don't need very much. So it's known as king of bitters. Mm-hmm. Actually, golden seal's known as king of bitters as well. Well,
that's a herb that you can actually just pick, you know, out in the fields and stuff, isn't it? Golden seal. No,
is golden that not? Seal. Is an endangered plant now in the wild.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So I do have golden seal in my dispensary. It actually comes from special cultivated stocks. It takes 7 years for golden seal to mature.
Oh, right.
So it's been over-harvested and therefore endangered. So I do buy it.
I'm glad I brought that up now then, because, you know.
Yeah. I do buy it in. I do keep it in the dispensary because sometimes it is the herb that I want to use.
Yeah.
But it costs me £100 a litre to buy golden seal. And I actually bought some golden seal powder recently because my dog had a cyst on her paw. 25 grams of golden seal cost me £40. Trade price.
Good grief.
Yeah. So it's very expensive because it's slow to mature. Andrographis isn't just expensive. How taste to that?
Bottoms up. It looks a little bit, yeah.
Well, it looks like looks a bit like a sample, doesn't it?
It does look like a sample. But let's give it a go. Oh, wow, that is bitter.
Whoa, isn't it just?
Oh.
Mmm.
Mmm.
So.
Yeah.
When you take something bitter, what's happening? Salivation.
Saliva, yeah.
Yeah, so you're starting to salivate. It's stimulating saliva. It's stimulating. So through that sort of process, it's actually stimulating digestive enzymes through your gut.
Wow.
But andrographis is, you've drank the whole lot. I just had a little sip.
I knocked it back.
Andrographis is a fantastic immune tonic, and it's one that I would tend to use for people if they've got viruses that just aren't shifting. You know, you get this feeling that they're hanging around in the liver a little bit. Well, andrographis is great at shifting that, or any sort of gut infections. It's one that I will use for COVID, because COVID hangs around, and of course the latest strain of COVID has been causing quite a lot of gastric issues with people. So great anti-inflammatory for the gut here as well. But that's your bitter. I'm still wet in the mouth.
Can we have something to take the taste away, please?
What could we take the taste away with? What would you like? Something aromatic?
Yeah, that would be lovely.
A little bit of thyme. How about that?
Oh, yeah, that's nice. I like thyme, yeah.
Well, thyme's another great one, which, of course, andrographis, you're not going to find it growing locally or growing in your garden, but a lot of people do have thyme growing in their garden.
And various kinds of thyme as well. I mean, there's so many different types of thyme these days.
Let's just get a bit of water. Thyme, like many of our aromatic herbs that we use in cooking, is a great antiseptic. Mm-hmm. When we ingest this, so when, once we absorb this into our bloodstream, so into the stomach, first of all, into the bloodstream, suddenly we have these aromatic compounds in our blood. Mm. They're not meant to be there.
Wow. Okay.
So your body will go, let's get rid of this. This is foreign. It's not meant to be here. Let's get rid of, and you get rid of thyme through the lungs and through the kidneys. So as it's passing it through the lung tissue, it's expectorant and antiseptic, and likewise through the kidneys.
That's interesting, isn't it? That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I love the smell. I love the smell of thyme.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous.
So if you had thyme in a tablet pressed into a white pill, you wouldn't get this.
I know. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. That's part of it as well, isn't mm-hmm. it? Just being able to smell it and enjoying it and knowing that it's going to do you good. Or should we have a go? It also looks a little bit like a sample because Karen's diluting these so that we can actually drink them.
You can taste the antiseptic, can't you?
Oh, you really can.
Mm.
But there's that lovely kind of aromatic thing going on right down all around the mouth and going back down through your throat. And also, obviously, because, you know, the nose and and your taste buds are connected, it's almost like you can smell it. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's really fresh.
It's really fresh, yeah. Mm. Really, actually, that is the word. It's refreshing. Mm. Refreshing.
Yeah.
Which I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. I use a lot of thyme in my clinic. I use lots of rosemary. I use lots of sage. You know, these really good aromatics. You know, they're really invigorating and uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, so thyme's good for depression and low mood.
So, and when you eat thyme, so if you have thyme in your garden and you pick some thyme, and you eat it, you don't get the same effect as this.
Of course you would.
It's not quite the same, though, is it?
It tastes different. That's more concentrated.
That's
just
what I mean.
Taking that one thing, whereas thyme you would...
I don't mean the same effect on your body. I mean the same effect in the mouth.
Oh, yeah, it's different because it's going to be diluted down with other things, unless you made a nice, strong thyme infusion. So you could grab some thyme, chop it up into a mug with boiling water, but make sure and cover the top of the mug up. Because if you allow that steam to evaporate, you're going to carry off a lot of those aromatics.
Yeah.
But thyme's a really nice tea. It's really good antiseptic.
Nice tea. Yeah, and that's where you do get that effect. Yeah. But if you just sort of chomp on a bit that you've picked out of the garden, it's not quite the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this tends to feel like it gives it's a bit more mouthfeel.
Yes, exactly.
Now, we're talking about aromas. This is one of my favourite herbs to use. Not an immune herb this time, but get your nose around that. Oh. look at the expression on JJ's face. I know this is one of our favourite plants.
I know. It is. So what do we do with that then?
Well, that is Damascus rose.
It's beautiful.
It is absolutely really gorgeous. Comforting. Mm. So rose is a hug in a mug. It really is amazing. It's very comforting. I use it for lifting mood. It's really good for anxiety, depression, feeling griefy. So I'll often use it for people when they're working through that process of bereavement. Mm. Use it in menopause. Menopause is great for hot flushes and really good for women who can't take HRT. So very cooling, very comforting. So anyone that's had a breast cancer diagnosis that is on an estrogen blocker like tamoxifen could use rose to help with hot flushes, but it also helps with the emotions as well. You know, because I think menopause is, you know, a time of, you know, there's a lot of letting go. And I guess grieving for the old self, the fertile self, as you're moving through. So I think it helps with that. And for a woman who's working through breast cancer, you know, there can often not be a loss there as well. There could be a loss through lumpectomy, mastectomy, or whatever.
There
could be a grieving.
Grief goes on around that, isn't there?
Yeah. So I really love the comforting herb in that situation. I'm going to let you have another sniff. It's a bit of a scratch and sniff session, this, but it is lovely
scratch and sniff radio and TV with radio and video. But I was just going to say, though, about roses. I love the rose plants, and that's just a gorgeous perfume. But it's not just the rose flower and the petals. It's the hips, and we're at the time of year now where the rose hips have really come on, and I'm going to be out gathering rose hips very soon, in fact, this weekend, and making some rose hip syrup.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also elderberry time.
Oh, no, it is,
elderberry syrup. And the other thing, of course, and we did talk about this in a previous show, was hawthorn. We made hawthorn ketchup. So it's hawthorn ketchup time.
It is.
And it's one of those ingredients that I put into my sort of bolognese's and things like that, just to give it that extra layer of flavour.
And we were looking out your kitchen window earlier, and the rowan trees are absolutely ready for picking. And rowan jelly is a traditional thing to go with cooked meats and things like that. But rowan also has a benefit to
it. Yeah, it's good for your heart. Yeah. So in Russia, they use rowan berry like we would use hawthorn berry here. So cardiac tonic. So, you know, vasodilator, it's full of bioflavonoids, that are really good for the circulatory system.
Yeah, so there is so much out there right now that we can make use of that really will help.
And of course, the slow berries are coming through as well.
Slow berries. Mm-hmm. When I used to drink alcohol, I used to make slow gin. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely, it did taste a little bit like coffee mixture, but it was really, really good for you. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I like a slow gin. And what I do is, you know, they say that you should wait until the first frost before you pick your slows. I pick my slows and then I put them in the freezer because we've got a way to create our own frost nowadays. Because I think if you wait until the first frost, often the slow will be gone by then.
So,
But you need to be careful picking slows because blackthorn, if you get a blackthorn splinter,
it's very so. They are very spiny.
It's very toxic.
Is it toxic?
Oh yeah, really, really. You know, out of all the thorns, you need to be really careful with it. If you get a blackthorn splinter, there's a good chance you'll get sepsis from it. So be really careful if you are picking slow berries.
Do it with gloves. Gardening gloves on.
Yeah. And actually, JJ, the other berry that's out at the moment is sea buckthorn.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah.
Again, quite difficult to harvest, but fantastic. You probably noticed in my yogurt lunch I had, I put some extra things in it, and one of them is a sea buckthorn powder.
Yeah.
You know, it's really highly antioxidant.
It is. It's great.
Really good for you.
And you can freeze the juice if you press it and sort of whiz it up and juice it. You can freeze that and use it throughout the year. Or make, you know, I guess if you could dry it yourself and make a powder out of it, but it's a bit of a faff. I mean, just harvesting sea buckthorn is a complete faff, but it's so worth it.
I would only dehydrate it if you have a really good quality dehydrator, though, because it'd be a shame to go through all that effort harvesting it and then not dehydrate it properly and just end up with
Mush, some
mouldy mush.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I interrupted you. You were going to do something.
I was going to get some valerian for you to have a sniff of.
Oh,
I love valerian.
Well, give me a sniff of it, but don't give me any because I might fall asleep.
You know, I do love valerian, but you'll have to wait until after this short break to find out what happened next. Stay tuned for more from me and Keren Brines-McLean. Right after this.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and today we're behind the scenes in the dispensary with medical herbalist Keren Brines-McLean, trying out all sorts of herbal tinctures, including valerian, which I was just about to take a sniff of before the break.
Let's have a sniff. Yeah, you see, now, I also love valerian. It's a herb that I have used over many years now. Mm-hmm. And in the olden days when I was younger, but in the past, what I've done, the way I bought valerian is to just buy the dried root and I would make a tea out of the dried root. But it just smells like that.
It's really earthy and
very
pungent.
Earthy and pungent. Mm-hmm. And some people can't stand the smell of it, but my word, it's really potent.
It is really potent.
Beautiful
stuff.
Herb.
It's a bizarre one because I really like the smell of it, but on one level it makes me think of like smelly socks at the same time. Yeah. It's a real sort of bizarre thing. When you don't know what it is and you get a whiff of valerian in a room, it can be a bit, what is that? But actually when I know what I'm smelling, that's lovely.
I love it. And I tell you what, the other thing, cats love it as well.
Well, I can always tell if it's in somebody's medicine. I've had people come back saying, well, I smelled a little bit of my medicine and my cat licked it up. And I sort of think, I don't need to look at your card. I know you've got valerian in there. Yeah.
Cats love it. Catnip, absolutely. But valerian, oh my word, they go nuts for it.
Yeah, well, I once bagged up catnip and valerian in little bags at Christmas time for my friends' cats, called them pussy potions. And they just really, really enjoyed them.
They do. Yeah. They do. They'll chew on the twigs. Mm. You know, if you have the twigs of it, they'll chew on those and they'll love it.
But valerian's a really interesting herb because for some people it works incredibly well, incredibly relaxing. So you're saying, don't give it to me, it'll make me fall asleep.
Yeah.
If I take valerian, I would tend to use it in a situation where I'm sort of stressed and sort of, you know, probably we were talking about that earlier on, that Vata sort of situation that, you know, you're all stirred up and you can't focus. Well, I find valerian's really grounding and earthing.
Yeah.
And it makes just sense. Really centres me. Yeah. Some people find it really stimulating. And
do they?
Yeah, so some people can't metabolise it very well. And instead of it relaxing them, it sends them into an absolute hype. Can't sleep, feel overstimulated and anxious. And I think that's to do with liver COMT pathways. So COMT is one of the sort of phase two pathways in the liver. And some people have got fast COMT pathways and some people have got slow COMT pathways. And I think people that have got fast COMT pathways don't sit very well with valerian. They don't sit very well with rhodiola either. So if you're somebody that reacts quite strongly to valerian, it could be that you've got a bit of a fast COMT pathway going on. And yeah, maybe you want to read around that subject a little bit. Massive subject, really complex, but it can reveal a lot about individual metabolism of herbs, foods, and even supplements that you take as well.
Interesting, isn't it? And valerian is such an invasive plant as well, because the garden varieties, still have those properties, don't they? Or do they?
Well, I don't know about the property of that red valerian. Yeah. I've never really looked at that, but I mean, I've got valerian in my garden.
Yeah.
You know, it's that really tall, willowy, with and then the lovely. But it loves to grow damp places, so we see it growing here along the river.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've got a bit of Himalayan balsam around here, which of course is truly invasive and really knocks out all the local species. But there is some nice valerian growing around.
Yeah. Well, I must look up actually whether that's also as efficacious as the herb valerian.
Yeah.
Valerian
officinalis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although some people do, I think I used to have the officinalis in my garden, in my herb garden many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to look that up and see whether that's a thing. But I see so much of it around here because it spreads so easily this time of year, I guess, when the seeds, because it's also one of those plants that has seeds that get born on the wind and like dandelions. So it gets everywhere. Yeah. But I think it's a lovely plant as well. And it'll grow out of, like buddleia, it'll grow out of walls.
Mm-hmm. Is that the garden one then, the red one?
Yeah.
I've never seen the wild valerian doing that, but I guess it depends.
No, the garden one does, though, certainly,
So it likes a different soil then. It's happier in dry.
Must be.
Yeah.
That's your phone.
That's my phone doing its thing. Right, I'm going to go and just nip away for a second, JJ.
So anyway.
I don't know why it chirrups occasionally. Technology.
We had this problem. We had this problem earlier with her phone. But yeah, so just ignore that bit. So what else? What else are we looking at today? I mean, maybe there's something that we should think about because it's autumn, you know, we're going into winter. Is there anything that we can take as a prophylactic? In other words, something that will help us not get any of the colds and flus that people talk about in winter?
Well, we touched on elderberry before.
Yep.
So definitely some elderberry is a good idea. I also love a bit of olive leaf. So olive leaf can be a great extract that has a direct antiviral activity. I like using a combination. So elder and olive will directly target the virus, but you also want to stimulate your own innate immune response. So that's where you would use things like echinacea, or you might use some andrographis, or you might even use some of your medicinal mushrooms. And of course, this time of year, we always end up talking about mushrooms, JJ, but we're in mushroom season. So even just eating communal garden mushrooms, button mushrooms, mushrooms from the supermarket will help to stimulate your immune system.
Yeah.
But if you can get out there and get some wild mushrooms, if you got your ID absolutely 100% and you know what you're doing, and a bit of wild mushroom coming in would be a great idea as
That's really important to get your ID 100% because, you know, some mushrooms that look like they might be edible absolutely are not, and you don't want to get any stomach problems or any other kind of problems from eating mushrooms.
And actually, JJ, it's the same for everything. Make sure even when you're gathering plants, there are some really toxic plants out there as well. Yeah. So even things like, you know, in the springtime, you're gathering wild garlic, you have to make sure that you're not gathering snowdrop leaves. You know, they can be quite toxic.
That's true,
So you always have to be really switched on, or make sure it's not lord and ladies that you're picking with the wild garlic. So you know, I would say only ever 100% uncertainty that you actually take something. Now, I've got a relationship with a Miller mushroom that I know it, and I'm 99.9% sure that I know exactly what Miller is, where it grows, how it smells. I've never eaten it because it's one of those that can kill you. And, you know, it grows next to seps, and I've found them with seps, but I just, there's that little bit of hesitancy, and I sort of think, because I'm not 100%, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I want to go out with a really experienced mushroom forager and then go, yeah, that is, you are 100%. And then I'll happily ingest it. So, you know, even I'm a fairly confident mushroom hunter, I would say. But that's one that I hold back on all the time because I'm only at 99.9%. So,
well, it's best to be safe rather than sorry. And, you know, we both are really big into foraging, just say. But both of us are very careful about what we pick. And if we don't know what it is, we just leave it because there's no point in picking something. Taking something from the wild and then, you know, making yourself ill because you've just found the wrong thing. Now, there are certain apps that you can use, you know, Google Maps as well. Oh, not Google Maps, but if you take a photograph through Google of something, it will tell you what it is. It's quite a good identifier.
But I wouldn't rely on it 100%.
But don't rely on it 100%.
I would say always look for two or three resources when you're trying to identify.
Exactly. So just to make sure. But there are things that you can use if you're new to it, but just make sure that you do
cross-reference,
make sure that you're 100% sure of what you're eating and know that certain things aren't great to eat. For instance, elderberries raw.
Can be difficult.
So I found that out myself once.
Cook them up. You could actually cook them into crumble or, you know, make them into a tincture and just infuse them a little bit or make a syrup. So cook them up into a syrup and they're much better.
And they're much, much better, exactly. I love them in crumble with apple or something like that.
Blackcurrant. Like brambles.
Yes. Anyway, we're getting carried away here now.
Well, they say that food should be a medicine, don't they?
So, they do.
Yeah,
it should be. And that's exactly what we should be doing. So that's all great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anything else that you want to show us before we finish?
What should I show you?
We can always come back another time and do another one.
Yes. What would I like to share with you? I know. One last herb. This isn't one that you're going to be finding locally. This is a fantastic herb for the digestive system.
Just hold it up a bit. Let's just see the colour of it. Because it's, oh yeah, it's a beautiful colour.
No.
What is that?
This is asafoetida.
Oh yeah. Oh, well, now that's of an ingredient in curries.
It is.
Yeah.
And the reason it goes into curries
and
is...
And the smell of it, oh
my... You know
what
it's called? Devil's dung.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really sulfurous.
Yeah.
I quite like asafoetida, so when I'm making... Oh, very different colour from... That's like a cloudy urine this time.
Yeah. But the smell of it...
Yeah, if you put a sample like that into your GP, you're going to be with some antibiotics.
You'd have a problem, yeah. But the smell of it smells like...
It's very sulfurous. It's a bit garlicky, isn't it?
But it smells like curry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you're making dals or cooking with lentils and pulses, it'll actually stop you getting bloated and windy from it. So it helps the digestive system.
Mm.
It's a really good carminative. So it's great for griping, rumbles and grumbles in the gut. And you can buy it. So from halal stores, etc., you can buy sort of compound asafoetida, which is a yellow powder. And that's what I'll put in when I'm cooking my...
Fabulous.
Yeah, but
cheers.
Whoa, that's got a really interesting flavour, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know I don't know how you'd describe that.
Pungent. There's a pungency there.
That's one word. Pungent is one word. It's it smells of curry, but it doesn't taste of curry. It's pungent.
There's a sulfurous taste.
It tastes. Oh, how can I describe it? It's really interesting.
It's very unusual, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that would sit really nicely with things like fennel and cardamom, cinnamon, all these lovely sort of aromatics that we get from Asian cuisine.
Yeah.
They're, again, all have been used because of their medicinal compounds.
Yeah, exactly.
So really,
yeah.
really good for digestion.
Yeah. It almost is like the rough end of some of those spices, like the rougher end of, I don't know, cumin and, you know, Do you know what I mean about that? It's very difficult to explain.
Well, it's not got the sweetness that you'd get from some of the spices. Yeah,
exactly.
So coriander or cardamom or cumin might have a little bit of a sweet element to it as well, and it doesn't have that. It just has a pungent.
Yeah. And that sort of almost like a grassiness in there. Yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah. But excellent.
So you can see we've got plants from all over the world. And I do use a lot of indigenous plants. You know, I've got plantain, nettle, dandelion, a lot of our medicinal weeds. But we've also got plants from other countries as well. So I have a few Chinese herbs here, a few African herbs, etc. So we tend to draw on that whole sort of global tradition of herbal medicine.
Fabulous. I love it.
Just gives us that wide range of therapeutics. You know, people will often say to me, why does my doctor not talk about that? Or why does my doctor not discuss this with me? And doctors work within their toolkits.
Yeah.
And so they have a very sort of, you know, modern medicine, very narrow point of view and trying to reach that sort of diagnosis. And this is the drug that we give for that diagnosis, or these clinical pathways that are followed. Whereas because we have plants that have this really wide-ranging effect and we can blend, we can polypharmacy with people, then we tend to broaden our thinking with how we're working as well. So your tools dictate your thinking processes, I think, when it comes to medicine.
I think that's interesting as well. And you know, your doctor will be looking at one bit of you and treating that bit of you often, whereas as a medical herbalist, you're treating the whole.
We try and treat the whole. So you're trying to look at that interaction between everything. So, you know, one prescription may contain something for your circulation, for your gut, for your liver, for your nervous system. And, you know, we try and look at where the imbalances are and try and then correct them.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. So if anybody wants to find out more about your work and maybe consult you, you work from your place, your home. Now you've got a lovely little consulting room here as well.
I've got a consulting room in the garden, and then I've got the dispensary in this inside the house.
The Garden Herbalist is how Keren is known. So where do people find out more about you and your work? You've got social media channels, that sort of stuff.
I've got social media channels, but you can access them through my website. And the website is www.thegardenherbalist.co.uk.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. It's a lovely website as well. And so you do talk about lots of different herbs. And so do head along to Keren's website. And you do have a YouTube channel as well, don't you?
I've got a YouTube channel. Well, you know, I've got a YouTube channel because you helped me build together and we did some filming for that. But actually, that was back in 2020.
That was a long time ago.
When things were starting to open up again after the pandemic.
Yeah.
So there's a YouTube channel, and I do Facebook and Instagram, and I am starting to get into doing some blogging as well. But when time allows me,
because
I'm very, very busy in clinic. But I do face-to-face appointments, and I do also offer Zoom consultations as well.
Exactly. So,
you know, I am fairly accessible to anyone that's in the UK.
Yeah, and you can post stuff out to people in the UK as well, which is brilliant. So do head along to that, and if you are interested, then do get in touch with Keren. But for now, thank you very much to Keren for allowing me into her. It's almost like a candy store, but it's really healthy and good for you.
Candy store.
Thank
or
you.
A healthy bar.
A healthy bar, yeah. It's like we've been tasting fine wine, but we haven't.
Nope, no wine passed our lips that day, although we might have been a bit giddy after all the morning's trials. I did enjoy having a peek behind the scenes, though, and I hope you did too. It's time for another short break right now, but don't go away, because I mentioned rose hips earlier with Keren, and I will be taking you through the process of foraging for them right now and explaining how to make your own rose hip syrup. I'll also be reviewing a new range of supplements, so stay with me for that, coming up right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm glad that you've stayed with me as it's time for, drumroll please, JJ's Health Review. So, Come with me into the Alchemist's Den and let me tell you all about a new range of supplements from a company called Nutrition Geeks. Now, they sent me samples of the range to test, but you should know that I don't earn any money from this review at all. It's not a paid promotion. I'll always be totally transparent and tell you if it is. So, with that out of the way, what about the products? Well, overall, I have to say that I'm impressed. On their website, nutritiongeeks.co, that's just .co, they say they want to make quality nutrition available to everyone. And I think they're well on their way to achieving that, quite honestly. They say they pride themselves on developing highly effective formulas and sourcing the highest grade ingredients to make sure their products provide maximum benefits and are sustainable as well as affordable. So let's take a look. Well, they sent me 5 out of their range of 15 formulas, all of them great combinations, I have to say. I won't give you all the prices, as some of them are reduced right now on the website, but suffice to say, they are great value. There's a magnesium glycinate with magnesium malate and citrate, which is a nice, highly bioavailable mix in capsule form that tackles a number of issues that you might experience from magnesium deficiency, which so many of us suffer from. And now, the Iron Energy Plus formula also has vitamin C, B12 and folic acid, so that's great to combat tiredness and improve your immune system and help with cognitive function. Now, another great combination is the turmeric with curcumin, ginger and black pepper. Now, turmeric's well known for its anti-inflammatory properties and ginger's great for digestion. Then there's the Ashwagandha Plus, and that's another winning combo, I think, with vitamin B6, L-theanine, and L-tryptophan for relaxation, better sleep, and improved brain power. Lastly, the vitamin D Maximum Strength, high dose, 4,000 IU in one easy-to-swallow micro-tablet, which is interesting, and a year's supply would normally cost only £9.99. But it's a bit reduced on the website right now. They also offer a combination with K2, which is more expensive. Normal price for that is $14.99 for a year's supply. And there's an optimum version with 1,000 IU, which costs $8.99. I think that's incredibly good value, quite frankly, for vitamin D. Now, the rest of the range is just as affordable, vegan and made in the UK. The few additives seem to be variously magnesium stearate, the anti-caking agent, microcrystalline cellulose, which can cause some side effects, including bloating and headaches, but only probably in large amounts, and hydroxypropyl methyl cellulose, and that I think is for the capsule shells. So it looks to me as if Nutrition Geeks have developed a pretty effective range of supplements with as few additives as possible at an extremely accessible price. I should also mention their very well laid out and very informative website, nutritiongeeks.co. Well worth taking a look. And I should mention the packaging. They send everything out in just pouches, which I think is fantastic. So you've not got bulky jars, either glass or plastic, coming through the post. It's letterbox friendly, as they put it on their website. So that, for me, is a real plus as well. It kind of feels like they've thought of everything, and I think it's probably going to be a great service for a lot of us. So what's my verdict? Well, this company, you might have guessed it, definitely gets a thumbs up from me. I applaud them for everything that they're doing. Now, some of you may know that I've been looking forward to making my rosehip syrup this year. And I mentioned it earlier with Karen in her dispensary. I just love roses, the beauty of the flowers and the perfume. But roses aren't just a pretty ornamental plant. They're packed with goodness. Did you know that rose hips have 20 times the vitamin C of oranges? They also contain vitamins A, B, E and K. That's a pretty good range. And that's why rosehip syrup became such an important factor in keeping us British healthy during World War II and after. I remember it well from my childhood, which was post-war, I might add, and I've recently tried to recreate it for myself. This year, though, I really did fear that I'd missed the boat.
Now, I've just come down to the shore where there's a very, very long hedge of rugosa roses. And the reason I've come down here, the tide is in, so you can probably hear the waves in the background. The reason I've come down here is because we had a very cold spell recently. And my usual spot for picking the rosehips in autumn, it wasn't doing very well. Some of them looked a bit wizened and a bit off. So I've come down here to see if there are any better. And there are some which are a lot better than my usual place. So what you're looking for is a lovely red colour, smooth skin, plump and firm to the touch. You don't want anything that's squidgy, because that's not going to work out well for you when you're making your rosehip syrup, especially if you're making the raw rosehip syrup. So look for a lovely colour, look for a firm hip, and look for something which has got an unblemished skin, because you don't want to be sharing your rose hips with the birds. Well, I mean, leave lots for the birds, but you don't want half of a bird's dinner going into your rose hip syrup. So these are the ones that I am going to pick. I'm going to take these ones back with me, a huge bag full, and then once I've got back, I'm going to tell you how to prepare them and where to find various ways of preparing them, actually, because you can either have a raw rosehip syrup or a cooked rosehip syrup. In other words, cooking up the rosehips to create a juice and then adding sugar to that. There's some great recipes online for that, but I will be doing my usual raw rosehip syrup. And there is one thing that you need to remember about rosehips, and that is that they, inside the raw, the red flesh, there's a lot of tiny little hairs that can cause irritation. So you want to be very careful of those. And yeah, I'll talk about that when I tell you about how to prepare them for your rosehip syrup. So I'll catch you when I'm back inside.
Right, well, that was a success, and I'm back with my booty. Most rosehip syrup is made by heating the hips and in water and, extracting the juice that way, then adding sugar. And there are lots and lots of recipes for that online. And in fact, you'll find more information on all of this in a blog post that I've uploaded at my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk. But right now, I'm going to tell you how to very simply make a raw syrup. Anybody can do it. Now, you can use the smaller wild rose hips or the bigger, juicier rugosa hips that I've been foraging for. And you'll find those in many parks and gardens. You might have them in your own garden. I'm lucky where I am that we have hedges of rugosa roses in many public spaces. And, it's just a beautiful and functional form of hedging. I love it. But whichever rose variety you use, you will need to sterilise a container using hot water or vinegar, or put them in the oven on a low oven heat. And then wash your rose hips, top and tail them, and either prick them with a fork or score them with a knife. You're effectively going to macerate the hips, and you want to allow the juice to flow out. Make it easier for it to flow out. Now, don't worry about the fine filaments inside the hips at this point, but you can, if you want to and want to go to the trouble, cut the hips open and remove the seeds and the hairs at this stage. So then take some organic sugar. Now, last year I used normal granulated, But this year, I'm going to whiz that up and refine it so that it's more like caster sugar. And then once everything is prepared, all you need to do is put alternate layers of hips and sugar into your container, fill it to the top, and then leave it on a windowsill for at least 2 weeks, turning it upside down every so often just to move everything around. After a while, the sugar and the juice from the hips will blend together. You'll see it change colour. Let it get to a lovely red colour if you can. You can leave it for much longer than 2 weeks, a couple of months even if you really want to, because the sugar will pretty much preserve everything. You don't have to worry about anything going off. So then when you feel it's ready, remove the softened solid parts and pass the syrup through a fine muslin cloth to catch any of the tiny hairs that might be an irritant. Then enjoy as a healthy cordial, ice cream topping, or just by the spoonful. Let me know how you get on. You can get in touch with me through my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, and all my social media links are there too. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more practical alchemy and more fabulous guests with great information on how to be naturally healthy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale, of course.